This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
And coming up right now is The Space Show. Welcome. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this week's The Space Show, Planet Earth profiles the pre-fire mission. And no, that is not about fires. And the Grace mission. And no, this is not about giving religious thanks. And also the AIM mission, and no, not about an archer taking aim. And we have other Earth science missions.
Earth, below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling. Home.
Welcome to our Planet Earth series, in which we look at how space technology is helping us understand our home planet. And this is episode 62. So let's get on with it.
Earth below us.
Now, NASA's first of two pre-fire satellites was to have been launched from New Zealand by a Electron rocket from Rocket Lab. And that was to have happened this afternoon at 5:15. However, it has been delayed until Saturday afternoon due to a severe weather system with rainfall expected in the east of the North Island. Well, pre-fire is an acronym for Polar Radiant Energy in the Far Infrared Experiment. It will measure the full spectrum of Arctic radiant energy and so help scientists to understand how much of the Earth's heat is lost to space. This will allow better predictions of how a warming world will affect sea ice loss, ice sheet melt, and sea level rise. The first pre-fire and a sister craft to be launched next month will orbit at 525 kilometres altitude in near-polar sun-synchronous orbit. The satellite's instrument operates in the 3 to 54 micrometre wavelength range. It is developed from flight-proven hardware used on the Mars Climate Sounder instrument aboard the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. That sounder was designed to map the three-dimensional structure of temperature, dust, water ice, and water vapor in the atmosphere of Mars. Pre-fire also claims heritage from the Diviner instrument that is orbiting the Moon aboard the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, measuring surface temperatures on the Moon. Well, Karen Saint-Germain is the director of the Earth Science Division at NASA headquarters in Washington. She was interviewed by public affairs at the nearby Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. We read the questions in our space show studio. So, Karen, how does understanding our home planet fit into NASA's science goals?
Well, NASA studies our home planet more than any other planet, and we use that unique vantage point of space to understand what's happening with our oceans and on land and on ice and in the atmosphere and how those systems work together. And pre-fire will be the newest addition to the constellation of over 24 satellites that study the Earth in this way.
And just what is Prefire?
Prefire is a pair of CubeSats that are flying over the poles, and they'll measure the outgoing energy from the poles in a way that we've never done it before. This is very important because a lot of the energy in the Earth system does escape through the poles, and it's that balance between the energy coming in from the sun and the energy that's leaving the Earth system that really determines where our climate is headed.
And how will Prefire add to our understanding of Earth and climate science?
Well, Prefire is a pair of two CubeSats, and they're flying independently, and that means we'll be able to understand that outgoing energy from the polar regions on a variety of timescales. That's going to help us get better at predicting glacial melt, sea ice melt, and a variety of other features of the Earth system that can help us prepare for the changes that are coming, including helping communities prepare.
How will communities be able to use the measurements that Prefire makes?
Prefire's measurements that will help us understand the energy that is the energy exchange in the polar regions will help us better model future ice melt, both the sea ice and the glacial ice that is water that today is trapped on land. When those glaciers melt, when that ice melts, it gets added to the oceans. It's a significant contributor to sea level rise. And sea level rise is one of the greatest challenges for our coastal communities. It can have impacts on the occurrence of sunny day flooding and on the severity of storm surges. So that's just one example of how a better understanding of what's happening in the Arctic affects lives in communities around the world.
Goddard Public Affairs spoke with Tristan Lacuya, who is Prefire's principal investigator at the University of Wisconsin. And their first question is, what is Prefire and what will it do?
The mission is called Prefire, and that stands for the Polar Radiant Energy in the Far Infrared Experiment. Prefire will measure the complete spectrum of emitted energy from the polar regions, and by doing so, help us to improve our predictions of polar climate change.
And what is the biggest concern that scientists have right now about the Earth's polar regions?
I think the biggest concern about the Arctic is just how rapidly and how dramatically it's changing. We're seeing changes in the Arctic now that are unlike anything that we've seen in at least the last 300 years. So we're unprepared for those changes, and we really don't know what we're going to need to do to adapt to those changes.
And how will Prefire make its measurements?
Each of our Prefire CubeSats carry something called a thermal infrared spectrometer. The thermal infrared spectrometer is an instrument that looks down at the Earth and gathers energy being emitted from the planet at different wavelengths. The instruments are going to be attached to what we call CubeSats. The CubeSats are about the size of a large shoebox, and the instrument itself is going to take up about half of that space.
And what will scientists do with the measurements that Prefire makes?
The real ultimate goal of Prefire is to be able to improve our predictions of 5 to 10 to maybe 50 years from now so that we can be prepared for those changes and adapt and make sure that the communities that are going to be affected are resilient to those changes.
And why is it important to make these measurements now?
Because the Arctic is changing so quickly, there's a real urgency to getting this information now. We need to have better predictions of how sea level will change, how the weather around the planet is going to change. The only way we're going to do that is to understand how the polar regions are responding to climate change.
Now, Kate Calvin is NASA's chief scientist and senior climate advisor. Again, Goddard asked some questions. We'll read them in the studio. Now, Dr. Calvin, what is Prefire?
Prefire is NASA's Earth Science mission to fly two CubeSats, or small satellites, over the polar region. The science from pre-fire is going to help us better understand heat loss at the poles and Arctic warming. The Arctic is warming much faster than the rest of the planet, and the information we learn from pre-fire will help us better understand those changes and better predict them in the future, including how that impacts temperature, sea level rise, ice sheet melt, and more.
And how will pre-fire add to our understanding of Earth and climate science?
So the data from pre-fire is going to be used to improve climate models. Climate models are tools that we use to better understand how Earth has changed in the past and to predict changes in the future. And what pre-fire is going to do is give us information about this heat exchange between the Earth and space, and we'll be able to use that to improve those models.
Why is it important to study heat loss at the poles?
So the sun doesn't heat the Earth evenly. There's more heat towards the equatorial regions than at the polar regions. And when that heat comes in, weather and currents move it towards the poles, and some of that is emitted back into space. But we've never systematically measured the loss of heat from the poles. And pre-fire is going to give us that information so that we can better understand and predict climate change in the future.
And how will the data from pre-fire help with climate science?
So the data from pre-fire is going to be used to improve climate models. Climate models are tools that we use to both understand changes in the past and also predict changes in the future. And Arctic is warming much faster than the rest of the planet, so we really want to understand that. And some of the processes that are happening in the Arctic, ice melt and formation, snow accumulation, changes in clouds, happen on a very short time scale. And with pre-fire, we're flying two CubeSats in asynchronous orbit, so we'll get more frequent measurements from it and be able to observe some of those fast time scale processes and use that to better improve our models and use those for predictions in the future.
And how are NASA's fleet of spacecraft helping us better understand our changing planet?
So pre-fire is going to join the more than two dozen satellites and instruments in orbit that NASA has that are continually monitoring our planet. These satellites and instruments can tell us things like vegetation, clouds and precipitation, carbon dioxide, and much more. And since we've been observing the planet for decades, we can see both what it looks like today, but also how it's changed over time. And we also use that information to understand how the Earth is connected as a system. So we have satellites that can show us changes in the mass of ice sheets, others that measure sea level rise, and we can use these together to understand how changes in the mass of ice sheets affect sea level rise, and many more examples of how the Earth is connected together.
As we pointed out, NASA's senior climate advisor is Kate Kelvin, and she explained to the Goddard Space Flight Center why climate change matters.
Why does climate change matter? Well, it's happening. We look at the Earth from space, and we measure it on the ground, and what we see is that the planet's climate is changing. The last years have been the warmest since modern record-keeping began. It's serious. Even a little change in temperature can have big effects, and we're seeing some of those effects now. Sea levels are rising, we're seeing more extreme events like heat waves and heavy rainfall and wildfire. And we know that a lot of those effects are going to increase with more warming. These changes are impacting decisions that some people make every day, like a farmer thinking about what crops to grow, or a homeowner thinking about flood risk. But there's hope. There are scientists at NASA and around the world that are researching this. We know more about our planet than we have ever before, and we learn more every day. So we know why climate is changing. We know that it's due to increasing greenhouse gases from human activity. We also have tools that can help us better understand and better prepare for future climate change. So we develop computer models that help us understand how much it might change in the future. And we're also developing technologies here at NASA and around the world that can help us limit future warming or respond to the warming that we're experiencing. So why does climate change matter? It's real, it's serious, and it's here.
At the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, Mary White is pre-fire's project manager. Again, Goddard asked these questions. Mary, how will pre-fire's measurements help scientists?
These measurements have never been made before. Similar measurements have been made, but decades ago, not nearly as detailed or as careful. And these are new measurements that will be able to provide data that gets applied to the climate models.
And what excites you about this mission?
I'm excited about this mission because I know it'll have a long-lasting impact on the science, and that science is very much directed at the humanity of this Earth, and that these measurements will be around for a long, long time, and that the scientists of the world will be using these to rely on heavily for the next 5 years. There will be future missions that bring even better data, but I think even for 10, 15, 20 years, these measurements will be used by scientists to inform our understanding of the Earth and the processes of heat loss for the Earth.
What breakthroughs were needed to create this mission?
So there was actually a lot of engineering development that went into building this instrument. The instruments are designed at JPL, and they're brought together from components JPL has previously built before, but they needed to be completely re-engineered and scaled down in most cases.
And what gap is Prefire filling in NASA's fleet of Earth-observing missions?
So there have been measurements made of the heat lost from Earth, but only heat in certain ranges from the really hotter, warmer temperatures. And yet there's still a lot of heat that's lost from the cooler temperatures, which is what we're really going to be able to measure by going over the poles. And that's such an unknown area of science that the scientists are now building in a theoretical assumption for what is being lost from the Earth. But by making these measurements, we can give them actual data so they're no longer reliant on their various assumptions about what it is.
You're listening to The Space Show, and hopefully that satellite, Prefire, will be in orbit come Saturday. We'll just have to see.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where this is The Space Show.
This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is planet Earth.
The Earth's gravity field is not only not uniform, it changes due to movements of groundwater and volcanic activity. This changing gravity affects the orbit of satellites. By carefully tracking pairs of satellites, the changes in the Earth's mass distribution can be measured. The first such pair of satellites, called GRACE, were launched in 2002 and operated until 2017. A second pair, GRACE Follow-On, were launched in 2018 and are expected to operate until 2026. NASA's Earth Science Decadal Survey report rated monitoring gravity change to map variations in ice sheet and glacier mass and land water storage as a high priority. Late in 2023, NASA and the German Aerospace Center signed an agreement for a mass change mission to be known as GRACE Continuity, or GRACE-C. It will be launched in 2028. Meanwhile, the GRACE follow-on team continue to publish monthly mass change and gravity field reports. They have underpinned many research findings. Here are some examples. Firstly, monitoring California groundwater. The GRACE follow-on last year recorded the largest seasonal total water storage gains over California after multiple atmospheric rivers made landfall during the 2022 to 2023 winter. Even with this increase, peak water storage was below values observed 15 to 20 years ago. This is due to long-term sustained groundwater declines. A second example, the 20-year GRACE data record has been analysed to show the increasing intensity of wet and dry extremes of the global water cycle, which increased as global temperatures rose. A third example is the GRACE satellites have been tracking polar ice mass changes. For example, net ice mass gains over Antarctica began around 2021 due to snow accumulation, mainly in East Antarctica, which offset the unabated mass loss in the West Antarctic ice sheet. A fourth example, in northern Italy, accelerated groundwater loss has been detected using a combination of GRACE satellite, well measurements, and vertical land motion observations. Since 2015, the groundwater loss had accelerated. Now, if conditions recovered to those experienced between 2007 and 2014, it could take 13 to 28 years for groundwater storage to recover from recent long-term period of decline. And so that sets the stage for a prolonged drought conditions. Well, we have this feature about the GRACE satellites.
Two pairs of satellites, GRACE and GRACE Follow-On, have been tracking Earth's water movements and global surface mass changes that arise from climatic, anthropogenic, and tectonic changes. GRACE is an acronym for Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment. Each pair uses the subtle changes in their orbits caused by gravitational changes as they pass over mass changes in the Earth below them to measure variations in the Earth. The project is a collaboration between the German Research Center for Geosciences in Potsdam and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration in Pasadena. Starting in 2002, their data record now spans more than 20 years. To date, over 5,200 scientific papers have been published using these data, the equivalent of about 5 new publications every week. This places GRACE and GRACE Follow-On amongst the most prolific and productive Earth science missions. These measurements have important applications and implications for everyday life. As of December of 2022, the GRACE Follow-On project team has processed and released 51 monthly gravity fields. The satellites have made growing contributions for essential climate variables in the global climate observing system. In addition to the existing essential climate variables contributions of GRACE data to ice sheet and glacier mass changes, sea level, and groundwater, the recently updated essential climate variables inventory now contains, for the first time, a terrestrial water storage data product, for which the long-term GRACE data record is the core observation contribution. The GRACE satellite data has been used for drought monitoring in Europe. There have been several years recently, for example 2002 and 2018 to 2019, with below average precipitation and above normal temperatures across much of Europe. Accompanying the drier and warmer than average weather is an associated decrease in lake and groundwater levels, decreased flow in surface rivers and streams, damage to forest ecosystems, and reduced or failing crop yields in agriculture. These highly visible impacts of prolonged drought have raised public concern in Europe about the current and future availability of water resources. The GRACE data played a key role in discerning the full scope of the European drought as it increasingly impacts deeper groundwater systems. Analysis of GRACE signatures of human intervention in the water cycle for the East African Rift region, where managed water storage in Lake Victoria has led to a measurable increase in water storage in and around the lake. Another study examined signals over the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which is about 45 kilometers east of the border with Sudan, during its initial filling stages in 2020 and 2021. The study found apparent discrepancies between water level observations through analysis of the European Union's Copernicus Sentinel-1 satellite data and GRACE total water mass data. One plausible mechanism could be water losses due to infiltration along the highly fractured faults and shear zones in this area and within the weathered basement rocks. Further research on this topic will focus on assessing these possible sinks for water. Scientists involved in analyzing the GRACE data highlighted that Earth's climate system has been doing rather strange things lately. Precipitation anomalies deviated significantly from climatic averages in 2021 and 2022. Severe precipitation deficits in the southwest United States and western Europe have led to significant reductions in land water storage and drought issues, while precipitation surpluses around the United States' Great Lakes, Western Australia, and Lake Victoria in South Australia made these regions more prone to flooding. Meanwhile, ice melt from Greenland and Antarctica has continued unabated, with both ice sheets having lost approximately 7,000 gigatons of ice since 2002, and raised global sea levels by 22 millimeters. The unique GRACE satellite data record continues to enable novel and impactful advances in the understanding of Earth system mass transport dynamics, and helps scientists better map out the future of water availability and sea level rise. A team from the Middle East has quantified how the 20-year GRACE data record provides a basis to assess how engineered and non-engineered river basins might respond to water cycle variability. Essentially, land water accumulation over non-engineered basins, for example, those that lack managed dams, reservoirs, featured significantly faster water decline as excess water drained or evaporated over a few months. This suggests that highly engineered watersheds may be better prepared to deal with the projected increase in the frequency and intensity of extreme rainfall and drought in the 21st century. Another team focused on how GRACE data can be used to improve seasonal forecasts of land water storage. Currently, meteorological seasonal forecasts have large uncertainties, which inevitably map into highly uncertain land water storage predictions. Based on the 20-year GRACE data record, statistical linkages with hydrometeorological variables, for example, precipitation, sea surface temperature, or runoff, can be used to improve land water storage forecasts by up to 1 year, an improvement on existing approaches. GRACE provides unique information on the wetness state of a river basin with regard to its flood-generating potential. Over the 20-year GRACE record, Greenland has experienced a persistent mass loss at 251 gigatons per year, with an acceleration of an additional 3 gigatons per year per year. And there have been large summer loss events of 400 to 600 gigatons in 2012, 2017, and 2019. The mass balance regime has been evolving significantly in recent years, especially over northern Greenland, which holds the largest potential for rapid sea level rise. In Antarctica, ongoing mass losses in the Amundsen Sea embayment of West Antarctica have been 122 gigatons per year. The Antarctic Peninsula is losing 26 gigatons per year, and Wilkes Land in East Antarctica 33 gigatons per year. This loss dominates a small but significant increase of 47 gigatons per year since 2009 in snowfall in the Queen Maud land sector of East Antarctica. The remaining glaciers and ice caps lost an average of 274 gigatons per year, with an acceleration of 4 gigatons per year per year. Overall, the northern hemisphere is losing much more ice mass than the southern hemisphere. The largest northern hemisphere contributors are in the Arctic. The figures for the Canadian archipelago is 70 gigatons per year, Alaska 72 gigatons per year, the Russian Arctic 21 gigatons per year, and Iceland 29 gigatons per year. High mountain Asia averages 22 gigatons per year mass loss, but with a large interannual variability. By comparison, the largest single southern hemisphere contributor is Patagonia at 35 gigatons per year. Scientists evaluated signals in the GRACE data record associated with two large earthquakes. They were the 2011 Tohoku, Japan, and 2010 Mol, Chile earthquakes. While large mass shifts and associated gravity signals during and after the earthquakes have been well documented, newer research has focused on possible precursor signals in the GRACE data. For both the Tohoku and Mol events, researchers found signals in the GRACE data records that suggest deep subduction zone activity several weeks and even months prior to the destructive quakes. Satellite observations of Earth's time-varying gravity field detect slow, deep, mass redistributions along major plate boundaries and provide novel insights into dynamic processes in the subduction system. These data are essential to better understand the seismic cycle and could potentially lead to improvements in early earthquake warning.
Planet Earth is blue.
After 16 years studying our planet's highest clouds from its orbit 560 kilometers in space, NASA's Aeronomy of Ice in the Mesosphere satellite mission has come to an end. Otherwise known by its acronym AIM, A-I-M, the AIM satellite has been designed for a two-year mission, but it lasted eight times that duration. Polar mesospheric clouds are the highest clouds existing in the border between our atmosphere and space. Known as night shining or noctilucent clouds, they are normally visible at twilight over the Arctic and Antarctic. Well, in 2014, English poet Stuart Atkinson wrote about this and these once mysterious clouds.
NLC by Stuart Atkinson, posted on 2014 June 14th. Apart from insomniacs and vampires, only a few ever see them. Most glimpse them accidentally, with no idea what they are. Deafened, dehydrated clubbers, weaving their way home through litter-strewn streets, see them shining through gaps in the trees. Sleep-deprived shift workers, their body clocks broken beyond repair, catch sight of them out the corners of their tired eyes. Farmers, hauling open screeching barn doors, pause a moment to look at them glowing in the east, dragging tendrils of silver over the still sleeping hills before heading back to their sheep. But some deliberately hunt them down. Coffee-drenched, they dare to dream of a northern sky sprayed a dozen shades of strange. Fight to stay awake at the end of a tiring day, hungry to see the fabled, mysterious NLC, shining above their streets, their hills, their town again. As midnight approaches, Special Forces skywatchers armed with cost-a-month's salary cameras, pockets stuffed full of ammunition, spare memory cards and batteries, creep out of their homes, leaving loved ones alone, to chase their prey. Eager eyes scanning the dusk, they rush to their favorite places, faces bathed in pale starlight as what passes for night in these summer months falls, a few distant suns flickering above as they plant their tripod standards on the ground. And wait. Most nights the sky around Capella remains beautifully blank, and they wander home thanking the universe for nothing, cursing it for teasing them, tempting them, making fools of them. Again. But other nights, at first they see mere whispers of light, pale blue-white lines scratched on the purple twilight by invisible cat's claws, graffiti scrawled on the northern sky by some unseen hand as the land below, aglow with a million streetlights, sleeps. But then they grow, a soft slow-motion explosion pushing outwards at the sides, expanding, blossoming, climbing higher, all the time brightening, brightening, until eventually the sky from west to east appears ablaze with a forest fire of cold blue flame. Then, if the universe is kind, the NLC truly come alive, and those watching in the small hours see a tapestry of curls, whirls and swirls stitched from the finest silver thread draped above the distant hills and trees. Hard not to feel a sense of dread staring at that shining cobweb, imagining a throbbing, celestial shelob squatting inside. Now the work begins. Shutters click, again and again, frame after frame exposed as the NLC's glow casts pale shadows behind the few who braved the damp and dew to pursue the elusive clouds. Time slipping through their cold fingers like sand, their cold hands deftly swap lenses in the dark. They know their favorite 18mm will show the whole display in all its glory, looking like a stargate opening above the Earth. Their trusted 200 mil will pick out individual waves in the sapphire surf, rolling, roiling star smoke blown by winds on the very edge of space. And then the inevitable fade. Yawning, the watchers can only stand and stare as dawn's golden fingers enviously tear their beloved clouds apart until nothing remains, and it's time to head back home. Not to sleep, as they know they should, but to load their photos onto laptops and make them come to life, teasing out each subtle smoky line until raw images and memories match. Then their work will be done, another hunt will be complete, and they will rest. Until the sun goes down, and the hunt begins again.
In its decade-and-a-half lifetime, data from the AIM satellite has thus far led to nearly 400 peer-reviewed publications. One finding was that mesospheric clouds can be created by meteor smoke and by water vapor from rocket exhausts. The ice in these clouds can cause radar echoes that had previously mystified scientists. The now defunct satellite continues to orbit the Earth and is expected to burn up in the atmosphere sometime in 2026. Well, here are the Chromatics, who come from the Goddard Space Flight Center, and a group of scientists and engineers, and they like to sing, and they have this song called Noctilucent Clouds. Dum, 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 dum.
Arctic cold twilight, casting off an iridescent light,
known for only the last century.
We don't know how you have come to be.
Noctilucent cloud, that ghostly shining polar shroud. We didn't think you'd be allowed at latitude so low.
There you go.
Shining over a darkened sky in mesospheric zone so high. How and why can you be? You're a cloudy mystery. For the 21st century, Noctilucent cloud.
Temperature so cold, sizing up the cosmic dust so old.
How much water vapor lies within?
Your layer so thin.
Noctilucent cloud, that ghostly iridescent shroud. We didn't think you'd be allowed at latitude so low.
Every year you number more and more, and with time you're brighter than before.
Forming in a most unlikely place,
at the edge of space. Noctilucent cloud, that ghostly iridescent shroud. We didn't think you'd be allowed at latitude so low.
We need to know.
Glowing over the polar sky in mesospheric zone so high. How and why can you be? Are you tied to our destiny? Our global climate history. You're still a cloudy mystery. Noctilucent, noctilucent, noctilucent cloud.
88.3 Southern FM. The sounds of the Bayside.
Planet Earth is blue.
On January the 15th of 2022, after a series of eruptions in the preceding months, the Hunga Tonga Hunga Haapai violently exploded. The initial volcanic plume rose 58 kilometres into the mesosphere, the greatest height ever reported. The eruption set off a massive atmospheric shockwave that travelled around the world at the speed of sound. That's 300 metres per second. Not surprisingly, the explosion was observed by numerous satellites. You have most likely seen, for example, the series of images taken by Japan's Himawari 8 meteorological satellite. Recently, other satellite observations have been reported. The European Space Agency's Aeolus satellite made several overpasses of the ash cloud. Aeolus was designed to measure wind speeds. Well, sound artist Jamie Pereira has created a sonification of the shockwave using Rayleigh signal intensity data provided by the Aeolus Virtual Environmental Platform. He transcribed 90 Aeolus recordings taken over a duration of approximately 15 minutes and assigned harmonic values to them. What you will hear is one reading every 2 seconds in a harmonic range that spans 6 piano octaves. Overlaid on that sonification, we shall hear a reading from a scientific paper that reports that a Japanese scientific satellite has made a startling discovery about how high the effects of the Tonga volcanic eruption reached.
An international team has used satellite and ground-based ionospheric observations to demonstrate that an air pressure wave triggered by volcanic eruptions could produce an equatorial plasma bubble in the ionosphere, severely disrupting satellite-based communications. Their findings were published in the journal Scientific Reports. The ionosphere is the region of the Earth's upper atmosphere where molecules and atoms are ionized by solar radiation, creating positively charged ions. The area with the highest concentration of ionized particles is called the F region, an area 150 to 800 kilometers above the Earth's surface. The F region plays a crucial role in long-distance radio communication, reflecting and refracting radio waves used by satellite and global positioning satellite tracking systems back to the Earth's surface. These important transmissions can be disrupted by irregularities in the F region. During the day, the ionosphere is ionized by the sun's ultraviolet radiation, creating a density gradient of electrons with the highest density near the equator. However, disruptions to this, such as the movement of plasma, electric fields, and neutral winds, can cause the formation of a localized irregularity of enhanced plasma density. This region can grow and evolve, creating a bubble-like structure called an equatorial plasma bubble. Equatorial plasma bubbles can delay radio waves and degrade the performance of global positioning satellites. Since these density gradients can be affected by atmospheric waves, it has long been hypothesized that they are formed by terrestrial events such as volcanic activity. For an international team led by designated assistant professor Atsuki Shinbori and Professor Yoshizumi Miyoshi of the Institute for Space Earth Environmental Research, Nagoya University, the Tonga volcano eruption offered them a perfect opportunity to test this theory. The Tonga volcano eruption on January 15 last year was the biggest submarine eruption in history. Ash plumes reached an altitude of 57 kilometers, the highest in recorded history. This allowed the team to test their theory using the ARASA satellite to detect equatorial plasma bubble occurrences, and the Himawari-8 satellite to check the initial arrival of air pressure waves and ground-based ionospheric observations to track the motion of the ionosphere. They observed an irregular structure of the electron density across the equator that occurred after the arrival of pressure waves generated by the volcanic eruption. ERASA is the nickname for the exploration of energization and radiation in geospace satellite that was launched by the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency in December of 2016. It was placed into an elliptical orbit with a perigee of 400 kilometers, apogee of 32,000 kilometers, and an orbital period of 570 minutes to observe near-Earth geospace environmental variations. ERASA has continuously conducted a wide range of plasma and electromagnetic fields from late March of 2017 to the present. The ERASA satellite is designed to observe electron density throughout the region from the ionosphere to near-Earth space with high precision and high temporal resolution. It is essential for studying the connection between the atmosphere and the cosmosphere. Shinbori said, "The results of this study showed equatorial plasma bubbles generated in the equatorial to low-latitude ionosphere in Asia in response to the arrival of pressure waves caused by undersea volcanic eruptions off Tonga." The group also made a surprising discovery. For the first time, they showed that ionospheric fluctuations start a few minutes to a few hours earlier than the atmospheric pressure waves involved in the generation of plasma bubbles. This could have important implications because it suggests that the long-held model of geosphere-atmosphere-cosmosphere coupling, which states that ionospheric disturbances only happen after the eruption, needs revision. Shinbori said, "Our new finding is that the ionospheric disturbances are observed several minutes to hours before the initial arrival of the shock waves triggered by the Tonga volcanic eruption. This suggests that the propagation of the fast atmospheric waves in the ionosphere triggered the ionospheric disturbances before the initial arrival of the shock waves. Therefore, the model needs to be revised to account for these fast atmospheric waves in the ionosphere." They also found that the equatorial plasma bubble extended much further than predicted by the standard models. The group also found that plasma bubbles can reach space at an altitude of at least 2,000 kilometers beyond the topside of the Earth's atmosphere. Shinbori said, "Previous studies have shown that the formation of plasma bubbles at such high altitudes is a rare occurrence, making this a very unusual phenomenon. We found that the equatorial plasma bubble formed by this eruption reached space even beyond the ionosphere, suggesting that we should pay attention to the connection between the ionosphere and the cosmosphere when extreme natural phenomena, such as the Tonga event, occur." He added, "The results of this research are significant not only from a scientific point of view but also from the point of view of space weather and disaster prevention. In the case of a large-scale event, such as the Tonga volcano eruption, observations have shown that a hole in the ionosphere can form even under conditions that are considered unlikely to occur under normal circumstances. Such cases have not been incorporated into space weather forecast models. This study will contribute to the prevention of satellite broadcasting and communication failures associated with ionospheric disturbances caused by earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and other events."
And the sonification there from the Aeolus data. Now, in Roman mythology, Libera is the daughter of the goddess Ceres, who in turn was the goddess of agriculture, grain crops, fertility, and motherly relationships. It is from Ceres that we get the term cereals, as in breakfast cereals. For many years, there has been an instrument called Ceres orbiting the Earth aboard the Terra satellite. CERES is an acronym for Clouds and the Earth's Radiant Energy System. Now, Terra was launched in 1999 and is now nearing the end of its operational life. Most appropriate is that the successor to Ceres is called Libera. Librera will record how much energy leaves our planet's atmosphere on a day-by-day basis, providing crucial information about how Earth's climate evolving, or climate is evolving over a period of time. Libera will measure reflected solar radiation with wavelengths between 0.3 and 5 micrometers and emitted infrared radiation at wavelengths from 0.3 to 100 micrometers. This has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie.
Southern FM.